Live from Piccadilly Circus in London, England, it's the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. 30 minutes of hard-hitting, no-holds-barred discussion about the exciting and dangerous world of professional alligator wrestling with your host, the eldest of the Ringhausen Brothers, slow-walking, smooth talking, long, lean, and lanky, the first banjoist for the New York Philharmonic, and the legal representative of the International Brotherhood of Professional Alligator Wrestlers, a man who once caught a bullet almost in his teeth, Richard J. Ringhausen. And are you ready? Tingling with anticipation? Marksman, sculptor, daredevil, the seven-time world welterweight alligator wrestling champion and winner of the silver medal in alligator wrestling at the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona, Spain. A man who could easily take out his own tonsils, the youngest of the Ringhausen Brothers and the star of your show, Alan J. Ringhausen. Yeah!
Big shout out to B Bumble and the Stingers, the Bumble Boogie.
That is 100% accurate. How did you possibly know that?
Yeah, when you name your band around the one, just one song, that's all you're going to ever have.
Well, that is exactly who that is.
The Bumble Boogie by B Bumble and the Stingers.
It is a take on the Flight of the Bumblebee. If I'm not mistaken. Are you eating chips while we're recording?
Pringles, man.
Oh, everybody likes
it. I haven't had Pringles in years.
Get out. I mean, it's not like they aren't on the shelf every single day.
I just don't eat them. I don't know. It's just not one of the things I go after.
I remember when Pringles came out. Stackable chips.
Oh, wow. That was amazing.
It was amazing.
And they tasted different than a regular potato chip at the time. Somehow.
Probably the potato glue that holds them together, and you just didn't know what it was.
Yeah. So, remove my own tonsils. I don't know I could do that. I'm not sure, you know, like, it's hard enough, like, when you get a little piece of skin right in your cuticle or your nail, and you catch it on every time you put it in your pocket, and it's, but then to rip it off, you got to be careful. You got to pull forward, because if you pull back, you rip into the skin of your finger.
Oh, that's terrible.
So that's one of the few things I can remember.
But you know, like in the movies when some guy, you see movies where some guy gets shot and, like, dig the bullet out himself and then stitch himself up. You've seen that, right?
Yeah.
You've seen the movie The Martian, haven't you? Matt Damon?
No.
Oh, well, I'll ruin it a little bit for
you. Go ahead, I don't care.
There's a scene in it right off the snap where he gets hit. He's on the planet Mars, and a big storm hits and blows some piece of equipment that punctures his suit and drives like a piece of steel into his body.
Uh-huh.
And the rest of the people all take off and leave him on Mars by himself. So he's the only person on Mars.
Well, they think he's dead?
They think he's dead. They thought he was killed in the accident, and lo and behold, he wasn't. He managed to stagger back to the place and realize they left him behind. But he's got a piece of steel stuck into his chest.
Okay.
He pulls it out himself.
Yeah.
You know, treats it and, like, staples it shut with a set of staplers.
That's the way to do it.
That's man work.
Tough
there.
It out.
So my question being, you think you could stitch yourself up?
You mean like if I was alone on the planet Mars?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, your options are pretty limited there.
What if you were caught in a piece of machinery?
That'd be bad, too. In Mars?
Can you give up an arm?
like an animal in a trap.
Yeah.
Maybe
something running here. I hear something. It stopped. What was that?
I don't hear anything.
You never do.
You know what I did lately? You want to know what I did?
Not really.
I don't care. I'm going to tell you. I went to an art exhibit of a local artist. Have you ever done something like that? You see something say an artist displaying his art.
I don't think so.
Yeah, well, I have.
I think I have maybe in California.
I have that too, where I've, like, when we've gone to some city and there'll be some building that's just like one artist that's displaying his art. You
right.
know? And like yeah. One room you go.
A gallery, Rick. You, it's called a gallery.
Okay, it's a gallery. You poke your head in, you know, and the pieces are like $8,000 each, you know. And
like down in La Jolla, walking around down the streets of La Jolla, yeah. It's got tons of galleries of various artists.
How do they pay the rent?
I don't know. Sell one piece of art for $10,000, you're probably doing all right, I guess. Right.
I know you don't want to blow your own horn, but the art exhibit I went to was the artwork of Alan Ringhausen.
Well, you've been telling people for years I'm a sculptor.
You're a sculptor. I know, but I just threw that in over the last couple of years because you just started.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Okay.
So, Grandma Moses was like 80 when she started.
Okay, here's, I'm going to just.
Grandma Moses is a real person.
Yeah. I know that Grandma Moses was a real person, and it was also the name of Granny on Beverly Hillbillies.
There you go.
Her last name was Moses.
Okay.
So she was Granny Moses. My question is this. I've known you for 63 years.
64, almost 65 years.
In that time,
yeah.
I was trying to think of how many times I saw you, like, paint a picture or
never.
Sculpt something.
Never.
Or, like, write a short story.
Never.
I can't remember a single time,
that's
and I don't mean to insult you.
Anything artistic,
I
ever.
Can't remember, well, other than playing in, writing songs for Larry and the Clunks. That was the closest to art that I would say that I
art.
Saw you. So, here within the last year or so, COVID hits, right? And I go out to the market, the fruit market, Dennis Ringhausen's fruit market, right? And inside the fruit market, all
Uncle
of a sudden,
Dan.
There start appearing, like, little metal sculptures,
yeah.
Like pieces of machine art where there's like gears that have been welded together in interesting ways and springs and coils and all sorts of steel things that you go in and say, what's this? Where'd this come from? Oh, Alan made it. And the next time you go in, there's another one. And all of a sudden, there's like these statues all around inside Dennis's market of art.
Mm.
Okay, I'm just going to say, what the hell possessed you? I mean, how did this come to pass?
Okay. For years, you know, like I would be at some auction or some place, whatever, and I think, man, that's kind of cool looking box of gears. You know, you could make something out of that. And, you know, so I'd take it home and I'd put it in the closet, and, you know, I had all these things laying around. Then finally, two things converged. I hit 60 and
lived,
and COVID hit. So now I'm, you know, alone, which is fine. I like that. But now I'm 60 and I've suddenly become mortal. And I said, well, if I'm ever going to do something with all this junk I've collected, I better get started or I'm going to die and it's still just going to be boxes of junk. At least it's junk creatively put together into bigger chunks of junk.
Well, first off, I thought you were going to say that that I'm 60 and I look back on my life and I've never created anything or left anything that's going to tell anyone that I ever existed on Earth. And I was about to say, well, what about your kids that you've raised? I mean, arguably they're a legacy that you might take some sort of pride in, or have they disowned you?
I haven't seen them in years. Let me tell you, two things converged. I hit 60 and COVID, and they just stopped talking to me.
They say a mark of successful parenting is that you become irrelevant. The parents become irrelevant to their children.
I would think it's the other way around.
You're wrong.
You know, you
they don't need you.
You raise them, you feed them, you get them out, and you launch them.
And they don't
out
need
into
you anymore.
The world.
They don't need you. Don't care about you.
Okay.
You've done your job.
I just figured, in your case, it's because they hate you.
Go back to your art.
I was done.
Well, I think, but, okay. So you've got all these little sculptures that just, it's like, I don't even know how to describe going out to the market and seeing a new one like every time I come out. I mean, I don't know if you do anything else once you started doing it. Dennis says that you built like some shop behind the market where you just spend your time welding and cutting steel, and you could be cutting the tops out of barrels, but apparently you're not doing anything useful with that time.
Cutting the tops out of barrels.
Well,
you feel is a useful use of your time. Where'd you draw that one?
I'm just saying. At least you'd have something that could be done with it. I don't know what you do with these things.
Any one of them could be a boat anchor.
No, that is true. Okay, you got two styles of art that I've noticed in this thing. One is like abstract pieces of metal, and the other is like a steampunk.
Yeah, kind
of. For people who are art ignorant, tell them what steampunk is first off.
It's kind of an industrial looking thing that usually has a lot of metal and gears in it, but it usually takes the shape of something that you recognize.
As opposed to being completely abstract.
That's correct.
And you kind of got into that, too. So it looked like some little robot creature that might be, like, riding a bicycle or juggling gears or whatever.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay. Well, those are interesting. Okay, so how did you come to have a show, a display in a gallery?
Well, people saw the stuff at Uncle Den's Fruit Market. And so they asked if I would do a show. That's how it came about.
Okay.
The local arts council.
In my intro, it references my writing, right? As a writer, Richard Ringhausen writer.
Yeah.
And over the course of the years, I've written like a couple of different books, novels. And I've let my kids read them.
Yeah. How'd they react?
Well,
just drop it in the trash can on the way out the door.
You remember what I said about
being
irrelevant to your children? Yeah. My question is, when you take your art, you know, it's one thing to put it in the market and leave it around. When you put it out publicly and say, I'm going to do an art show.
Yeah.
You're laying
yourself. You're taking a chance.
You're taking a chance.
You certainly are.
Someone's going to walk in and say, what the hell is this? What is this? A bunch of trash.
Yeah.
You need to stick to whatever
Rick,
it is you do.
That was everyone.
And what I especially like, let me finish that first off. So is your skin thick enough to take it that if someone says, this one, I really don't
it's
care
for. It's not
this.
Really my style.
Yeah.
You're putting it gently. Whereas your friends walk in and say, oh, what a bunch of crap.
Yeah, well, I understand that.
What a mistake.
I guess by putting it out at the market in front of your brothers, you're automatically...
You already heard the worst that
you're already
get.
You're already working on getting your skin toughened.
Yeah, I've heard it.
They're going to walk in and say, what the heck is this?
This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life.
You know what I would say about letting your brothers see your art is that there's none of this... None of this where they're going to politely tell you that it's wonderful. If they think something's good, they might say so.
Maybe.
And if they think something's bad, they will unquestionably say so.
Oh, yeah. It's like there's effort going to new levels of evil.
See, I think every artist should have a set of family members who, like, just roast them.
Hate it!
You know, to toughen them up for the real world when they take it out.
Yeah.
You know, if you read, like, the work...
The subtle ones, though, are the more interesting ones. You know, like, you'll have somebody, you know, they'll walk past 9 of your objects, and then on the 10th one, they'll say, well, I like this one.
You know what I was about to say is, you know, we got a little book of poems by Robert Frost, you know, sitting in the bathroom. And I read them and go...
In case you run out of toilet paper?
I sit there going, I think Robert Frost needed to have some brothers.
He needs some critiquing. Yeah.
Some brothers say, what a piece of trash.
You're saying this about the greatest poet in the world, Rick?
I don't care whether they say he's greatest
That's
poet.
That's pretty subjective. Everything about art is subjective, though.
Okay, where's my little piece of paper that I brought with me?
Oh, you're getting subjective now?
Yeah. My question.
Here we go. Here we go.
No, I was looking at Rene Magritte. You know who Rene Magritte is?
The guy that wears the bowler hat with an apple in front of his face.
Yeah, he paints that a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I was looking at the names of some of his paintings, right?
Yeah.
Wreckage of the Dark, Taste for the Invisible, The Voice of Silence, Attempting the Impossible, The Eternally Obvious.
Okay, so I need to go more ephemeral with the names of my objects?
I mean, you know, if you go look up Magritte's paintings, you know, and look up any of the things I just read,
right?
They don't have anything to do.
How you get, I'm not getting that here.
Wreckage of the Dark. You know, you look at it and go, huh. And the only one that I really get a kick out of Magritte is he paints a picture of a pipe, right?
Yeah.
And the title of it is, This Is Not a Pipe.
Now that's good.
You know, and you make the thought is, well, it's technically not a pipe. It's a painting of a pipe.
Right. In the end.
Yeah. So when you, like, name your stuff, right?
Yeah.
Are you going, I mean, is it a bottle opener? Doorstop?
Boat anchor. Right. I should do that. Yeah. Wreckage.
No. When you
1969 Volkswagen transmission.
When you were first thinking of displaying this stuff, my advice to you was to do exactly Magritte and just come up with preposterous names for all. And ideally...
Rick, there's still time. You can call it whatever you want.
I do.
I've heard your
but
names
I
mean, for
what
it.
You want some is something that's incredibly pretentious.
Right. Okay. So
now my question is, did you sell any of your art that day?
I wasn't selling it. I was displaying it.
Okay.
I had a lot of requests for purchase.
Okay. The secret to art that I've decided is just what you said down in La Jolla. When you put these things out, the doorstop, $3,000.
You put a, I don't want to sell it price on it.
Yeah, exactly. And that way, let's say that you put like $5 or $10 on each one of them, right? And right. You have your display. And at the end of the day, nobody buys any of them.
It's hurtful.
You know, that's pretty tough on your ego, yeah, man. Yeah. But you know, you put prices of $4,000 or $5,000 on each one. And go, well, you know, the hillbillies around here aren't really going to pay that for it.
Right.
And if somebody does,
yeah, then you're like, would you like to place another order?
Well, the only thing stopping people from buying my $4,000 art is that it's in Jerseyville and not La Jolla.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I need to move.
Huh?
I need to move.
Yeah. Well,
and dress more
eccentrically.
Eccentric, yeah. I got to go with the turtleneck. Got to start there.
No, I think so, too. Turtleneck, that's good, nice, pretentious look right off the bat.
What about a beard?
A pointy beard. Yeah. Can you grow a beard?
Of course I can grow a beard.
Can you grow a good beard?
Well, Rick, looking at you, I don't know that you know what the standard is for a good beard.
Well, I'm not a pretentious artist, am I?
My bottom line on the whole business of making these things, it's just something I like to do.
What could be a better motivation than that?
Right.
Who would want to, you know, let's say that you're like a boilerplate that you write.
Because I got time because my kids don't, you know, have anything to do with me anymore.
I was going
to
say don't like you.
Wife wants me out of the house.
And she's always been that way.
Right. And I'm cleaning up the shed so Dennis gets the benefit out of it.
Win, win, win.
Yeah. So that's the whole tamale right there.
Okay. Here's something else I was going to touch on. You know who Monet is?
Yeah.
Okay. Monet. He painted...
water lilies.
He painted water lilies. But there was like a set of haystacks in a field behind his shop.
Yeah.
And he painted those haystacks 30 different times.
Right. Kind of different hues and shades and blah, blah, blah.
He painted Rouen Cathedral over 30 times. He painted the Waterloo Bridge 41 times, and he painted the lilies in his pond over 250 times.
Did you guys, when we were over in France. Paris, France.
Paris, France.
And they had the Monet Museum. It was like a big oval.
Yeah.
And they had some of those giant paintings they did.
Yeah.
I almost fell asleep in there.
Oh, God. And there's just tons of them. My question is, when you like, let's say you make one of your little robot men holding a...
I'll never make another one that's remotely like it. You don't, I have no desire to
you don't,
do that.
You don't feel the desire to say, I'm going to make another one exactly like it, but maybe have, instead of a 5/8-inch bolt that he's holding, it's going to be a 3/4-inch bolt.
No. Zero. Once I finished one, I'm moving on. I don't want to do a theme.
I'm not going to just keep... You know, these water lilies look pretty good. Think I'll paint another set of them.
I think I'll go with the... A number 9C3 blue mixed with some Singapore sunset saffron yellow.
You know when he ground out 250 paintings of water lilies, right? Don't you think the value that's going to drive the value down? That everybody that has a painting of a water lily has one? Everybody that wants one has one?
It makes you wonder why... People latch on to what he did. Now, look at Picasso, you know, another one of the most famous artists, you know, with giant price tags on his stuff. His stuff looked different.
Yeah, each one. Okay. Bob Ross.
Yeah? What about Bob? What
is Bob Ross.
What is it you want to know
painted
about
over 10,000 paintings in his lifetime.
That's right, Rick, he did.
And they're
and they
all
look pretty good.
And they're all pretty much the same thing, though.
They are. And
mountain, lake, some trees on each side of it, some clouds, and maybe
just,
a deer.
And maybe just a little bush down here. That's right
happy
there.
Little bush.
How about that? We'll just put a couple more right here along the shore. You know, okay. They have started to release some of his paintings finally.
Bob Ross, when he first...
Not the finished ones.
When Ross got first started, some person that went to his like one of his first little art shows... some lady named Kowalski thought that he was great and talked him into forming a little corporation called Bob Ross Corp. It was owned by Miss Kowalski and her husband, Mr. Kowalski, and then Bob Ross and his wife. And then they had some falling out where Bob Ross left all of his paintings to his kids when he died. The Kowalskis like sued and retained the rights to all of Bob Ross's paintings. And they jealously guard them and only release like one a year that goes up for sale to keep the price high. I mean, none of this. We're going to release a whole like truckload of water lily paintings of Bob Ross. It's just one at a time.
Yeah, I had this friend and his name was Saunders Schultz. I call him Sandy Schultz. And he was a sculptor and also a painter.
And, was he a good one, though?
Yeah, and, like, he did, like, giant, huge sculptures, like, that would be in front of, like, a skyscraper in the little plaza in front of us, and then there's some, you know, odd-shaped piece of stuff out there. That's the kind of stuff he made. But in his house, he lived in St. Louis, in his house he had these prototypes of the giant ones that he would do, but they're, like, little tabletop versions that were maybe, 20 inches tall instead of 20 feet tall.
Like an artist that paints postcards of his own paintings.
Okay. But I thought that those were really cool. Like he, the closest one I think is there's a giant sculpture in front of the Brown Shoe Company national headquarters in St. Louis. There's a giant, like, chrome sculpture out in the lobby there.
Isn't that guy that, like, just takes big sheets of steel and lets them rust, right?
No, his are stainless. These are beautiful. They're like chrome. But he's gone now. But I was working on a project with him, you know, unrelated to his art. And one day I was down there, and he comes out with a painting that he made for me. You know, I collect skulls, and he had been at my office and saw that. So he made this painting, abstract painting of a skull, and signed it. You know, and on the back says, to my friend, Allie Rinkins, blah, blah, blah. He says, here. He said, I made this just for you because of your love of skulls, and I found that really interesting. And he said, I signed it on the back. He said, it'll be worth more once I'm dead.
Love that.
He had to add that in there.
Now, someplace down in this basement where we're recording,
yeah,
is one of your sculptures when you started.
Oh, you've moved it to the basement,
Sue and I got one of your sculptures, and at Christmas time it goes into the basement because we put Christmas tree up, but it comes back up. My question is, when are you going to die?
Oh, so that will be worth something. The bad
I figure that's the only hope.
Bad news, Rick, is you're not going to see that happen.
Huh. Of course, my daughter Jackie has one, too.
Yeah. Maybe that's special for her wedding.
She might outlive
She
you.
Might capitalize on that one. That was a cool one, too.
Had a little lightning bolt. Yeah. She's into lightning.
I thought it was a perfect fit for her. That's the only one that I've ever done by request.
Oh, for Jackie?
Yeah.
Well, isn't that nice? Is she your goddaughter?
I don't know.
No,
I think Alex. Alex, I'm his godfather.
And you're irrelevant to him, too.
we're definitely to that point. To be honest with you, I've kind of reconnected with Alex this past year by running the Apple Market together with him. Out on the road.
He said he went down and did that with you a couple times.
Yeah, he was there a few times for that, so I actually got a chance to catch up with him more so than with your other children.
Okay, let's talk about some art critics. What do your children think of your art? Are they brutally honest? I mean, do they say, hate this one, love this one?
Yes. They haven't come out and, you know, they're a little more delicate than hate. They'll say, this one's interesting. And just leave it at that and make no more comments on it. But certain ones will say, I love this one. And then if they really like it, I absolutely love this one.
And the wife?
Oh, she's super supportive of it.
Ah!
And believe me, if there was an unfiltered criticism to be had, it would come from there.
I saw at your exhibition that the old man and the old lady were there, too.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I think about my dad going to a museum of modern art.
Uh-huh.
And ordinarily, I'm thinking that if it wasn't his son... that you would have got an entirely different set of comments out of him from two.
Yeah.
But he seemed like reeking with politeness. And maybe it's the fact that he's getting older.
Yeah.
That he doesn't feel the need to just say what he thinks.
He did notice that on one of the pieces I had out there was a piece off of his hydro ladder.
Well, that's a piece of my hydro ladder.
He said, what are you doing? What are you doing? I said it was broken. Oh, okay.
Couldn't you weld it? Don't you know how to weld now? Can you cut the tops out of some barrels?
I don't know if you've ever noticed, but at the orchard, the family orchard where they have the big packing house warehouse, I made a piece.
I've seen that, yeah.
And put it there, and it's an abstract apple tree.
Yeah, it's right next to the rotoverter.
Well, where it used to be.
Okay.
It sits on the actual concrete slab where the rotover used to be. But I was at the farm one day, and I was in the shed, and Dad was standing outside waiting on some customers. And I heard him ask, well, what is this? And Dad said, well, my son tells me it's an apple tree.
That just says it all, doesn't it?
It pretty much did. But I thought that was a great one out there. It seemed fitting for
very nice.
And it was all made out of parts from the orchard.
Parts that you cut off the old man's equipment.
All his good equipment. Never use that again now.
Yeah, you're ruined. Okay, here's a question for you. I mean, your stuff, I mean, the last one I saw that was new and different was a pretty big like box that had a bunch of wires coming out of it.
Yeah.
I think that one's called... attempting the impossible or the eternally obvious. My question is, have you thought now about making ginormous sculpture, like big stuff that could go in front of the courthouse?
Oh, yeah. That's been on my mind. All you got to do is build a prototype, and you can make the big one then.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, but, you know, a lot of your stuff has, like, gears in it. You know,
yeah,
it's one thing to find a gear that's has a diameter of 4 inches, for instance.
Yeah.
But if you're going to blow it up, to find a gear that's, like, you know, 4 feet apart or 4 feet in diameter, that's a big gear.
It's not that hard.
Get out.
Believe me. Yeah, they're out there.
4 foot gear?
It's, yeah, it's handling them is the... And then the other thing is, as you start getting into those bigger things, there's a bigger risk of injury as well.
To you or the people who are around it?
Pretty much everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're going to have a like a steel rod that's 15 feet long and, you know, like a foot in diameter, that's pretty...
It's going to have some weight to it. Yeah, you're going to move it around with a forklift.
Well, I mean, that, how do the guys who make giant steel sculptures do that?
They have, you know, like chain hoists and heavy equipment to get it in place. Yeah.
But you've been thinking about that?
Oh, yeah.
Make it so big steel.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the hydro ladder looks like a piece of art kind of already. I would think if you cut the old man's hydro ladder up, you'd have some interesting pieces to work
with.
Just
hope he's not talking about this, because now he's going to be real protective of his hydro ladder.
Your chosen medium is steel, though, correct?
I like it, yeah. And, you know, I've had very few. You know, I've had some cuts and scrapes and stuff like that. A few stitches in working on the art. I had an angle grinder kick back on me and cut across the back of my thumb. Cut to the bone. Yeah. And the guy immediately looked at that and like, not good.
You got to suffer for your art. Picasso, like, cut his ear.
Sometimes. That day I cut that, I was out in the shed, the workshop behind Uncle Den's apple orchard. And I come in. And, yeah, I got blood running all over. And Dennis says, I guess I better close up so I can run you to the emergency room. I said, well, better call Sarah first because she's at the back of the house. I call her up, and she said, just stay there. I got to put some makeup on, and then I'll come take you to the hospital. But she wasn't going to go until she had some makeup on.
What? Is it that time? What time
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, we're out of time. We're way out of time. We're way beyond that.
And that beeping that people might have heard was your wife, like, trying
calling
to get
right
in touch
now.
With
it's
you.
Like telepathy.
Are you talking about me on that podcast again?
I told you not to do
right.
it.
See you later from Rick Gator.
And Alligator.
This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. The Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour is brought to you by Uncle Den's Roasters. Tastes just like chicken, but it's not. And by Cannoli's Canine Cough Drop. If your dog is coughing, he's coughing for a cannoli. No portion of today's broadcast may be reproduced without the express written consent of the North American Alligator Wrestling Association. And with that little bit of legal business in hand, see you later from Rick Gator and Alligator. This has been a Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Network production. Accept no substitutes. You know, there aren't any.